Your proud defender of the American dream, Rick Smith.
So, Lindsey Graham, good old Lindsey Graham, and where was he during the Merrick Garland year? Where was it? When? Why wasn't it imperative during the year that they held off Obama's nominee? But now it is imperative, Lindsey Graham says. The Judiciary Committee moved forward on the Kavanaugh nomination and a committee vote ASAP. Am I the only one who thinks that, you know, this entire situation just ripe with irony, hypocrisy, lunacy, insanity? I'm just mind blown. Anyway, here to share some thoughts on why it's so imperative, why now we have this sense of urgency to fill that seat on the court. I've asked our good friend Ian Millhiser to come talk with us. He's the justice editor over at Think Progress. Ian, thanks for taking time for us.
Good to be here. Thanks so much.
It's imperative, Ian. Imperative, I tell you. We must do it now.
The fate of the republic depends on it. Yeah, it's just absurd. I mean, let's talk about what's actually at stake here. I mean, realistically speaking, Republicans have a majority in the Senate. Even in the best case scenario for Democrats, they will continue to have a majority through the end of December until early January. So, like, tomorrow, Donald Trump could pull the nomination of Brett Kavanaugh, replace it with any number of people. Say he picks Ray Kethledge, who, if anything, is more conservative than Brett Kavanaugh. And that replacement nominee, you know, assuming they aren't, you know, there is an incredible accusation of attempted rape against them, would be confirmed. So, like, the actual substantive stakes here are zero. You know, Republicans are going to be able to get their fifth vote to overrule Roe v. Wade. They're going to be able to get their fifth vote to screw workers. They're going to get their fifth vote to screw voting rights. Like, there are very little possible futures that don't end with Republicans controlling the Supreme Court. What is at stake here is the very basic principle that we don't want a seat on the United States Supreme Court to be held by someone who's credibly accused of sexual assault.
I'm right there with you. I mean, you know,
yeah.
It seems simple to me. It's, you know, those of us who live in decent society seems very simple, which is why I look at what the Republicans are doing and the apologists are doing and the, you know, the Tucker Carlsons and the, what's that idiot woman's name that I can never remember?
Laura Ingraham. Yeah.
You know, I'm just going, really? Are you really going to stake your entire career, everything on someone who's accused of assaulting a young girl? Really? Is that where we've gotten to the point? Have we gotten that much in the team sport mentality that we right. can't let our team down?
Yeah, and let's play this out a bit. I mean, if Kavanaugh is confirmed possibly as soon as June of next year, the Supreme Court is going to gut the right to an abortion.
Right.
You know, they may overrule Roe outright, but one way or another, like, the right to an abortion is going to cease to exist, possibly within a few months, if Kavanaugh is confirmed. Now, when that headline happens, if you are a Republican who has worked, you know, 40 years to achieve this goal, do you want the optics of that to be that five Republican men stripped women of their rights, and they did, and one of those men was credibly accused of sexual harassment by Anita Hill, and the other man was credibly accused of attempted rape? I mean, the backlash that will inspire is going to be tremendous, and it's not just going to be to that one decision. I mean, the backlash threatens the legitimacy of the Supreme Court itself. And I don't understand why the Republican Party wants to endanger an institution that they are about to seize control of.
That's an excellent point. But again, I don't think they think that far down the road. We have the power now. We're going to impose our will now. We're going to get what we can now. We're going to steal as much as we can now. Because look, I mean, they're talking about another tax bill. I mean, they don't really care what the average voter thinks. In fact, I think they have nothing but disdain for the average voter.
Yeah, I mean, I think part of what's going on here. So remember Todd Akin and Richard Murdoch?
Yep.
These were two U.S. Senate candidates who were running in red states in races that Republicans really should have won. And, Todd Akin, of course, introduced us to the term legitimate rape. And, Richard Murdoch said that a baby who is the product of a rape is a gift from God. And because they said these idiotic things, they lost their races. And, I'm glad they did. And I think, what most people think about that is people who believe these abhorrent things should not be United States senators. I think what a lot of Republicans think about those two races is this is unfair. These are red states. These are our states. These are our Senate seats. And we were ambushed. We lost these seats unfairly because these Democrats unfairly said that if you make one statement like this, we don't get to have a vote so that we can pass our tax cut. And I think that part of the reason they are standing so firm behind Brett Kavanaugh is they want to draw a line in the sand. They want to say that it will no longer be permissible for a person who is going to vote with the Republicans on everything that the Republicans want to not get a fancy job because that person has said or done sexist things or that person has behaved abusively towards women.
Right.
That is the line in the sand that they want to draw here. They feel burned by Todd Akin. They feel burned by Richard Murdoch. They feel like they were entitled to those Senate seats. They think they are entitled to this seat on the Supreme Court. And how dare these women come along and say that the GOP should not get the thing that they are entitled to?
No, you're absolutely right. And I've been watching some of the voices. Like Ken Starr came out and said something that he believed Brett Kavanaugh. I'm going, really?
Right.
Ken Starr, who got thrown out of Baylor for mishandling a whole bunch of sexual allegations?
Right.
The guy who spent, made his name chasing down Bill Clinton in a failed land deal? Really? And we came up with the word humidor that I don't think anybody had any idea what it was? There was just a Ari Fleischer, for Christ's sake? I'm like, are you kidding me?
One thing, I can't remember who said this. I don't want to take credit for it because it's not my idea. But, there's a certain power in hypocrisy. But if you are able to be a complete and utter hypocrite, if you are able to say that it is utterly imperative that Brett Kavanaugh be confirmed as soon as possible, and you're able to do that, the corpse of Merrick Garland's Supreme Court nomination is still warm. If you are able to do that and get away with it, there was a certain brazenness to you. There was a certain primal dominance to being able to behave with such utter disregard for the truth and for what you yourself have said in the past. And I think that's part of what's driving this here. If they can force this through, regardless of the merits of the arguments for or against them, then man, I mean, that is a special kind of dominance that is totally anti-democratic. But, if you have the opportunity to get that kind of power, I see why it is tempting.
Oh, no, absolutely. And look, but isn't this who, I mean, this is who the Republicans are. They're an authoritarian type party. I mean, it's all about their control and their dominance. And you said, utter disregard for the truth. The truth doesn't matter to these people. I mean, they came up with the term alternative facts. They're just their alternative facts. They just see things differently than you do, Ian. This is just their rightful place. And it's what's infuriating to me is, I have conservatives all the time who want to rewrite the Obama years and want to make it sound like the Republicans were victims and they weren't the ones obstructing and gridlocking and delaying and pushing austerity and pushing pain and suffering and doing everything they could do to slow the economy and destroy any quote unquote win for Obama, and now turn around and say, oh, the Democrats are obstructing like no one's ever done. And I'm going, did you miss 8 years of your life?
Yeah, and this isn't just dangerous because we are presently being ruled by very bad people. This threatens very important institutions. Justice Kagan, who was one of Obama's appointees to the Supreme Court, gave a talk in Brooklyn recently. recently, and she was much more blunt than I would ever expect a Supreme Court justice to be. She said, look, like, people obey the court because they choose to obey the court, and they don't have to make that choice. Like, we collectively as a nation can decide that the Supreme Court is just a bunch of partisans acting like partisans, and why should we care what they have to say? And, you know, and then she said it is incumbent upon the Supreme Court itself to not give people that impression. And if it seems like what is happening is you have five partisans on one side, four partisans on the other side, and whichever party controls the majority gets the result it wants every single time, people will lose faith in the Supreme Court. And that takes us to a very dangerous place. I mean, I've been very critical of the Supreme Court. I wrote a whole book criticizing it as an institution. So, like, you know, I mean, I've said a lot about how the Supreme Court has not behaved well in our history. But you can't not have a judiciary.
Right.
Like you have to have some sort of adjudicative body whose job is to take the laws that we have and apply them to the facts of individual cases. And if that judiciary is widely viewed as being captured by one party and simply, you know, doing what it can to advance political goals, regardless of what the law says, things are going to get grim. Because, you know, you could have governors saying they won't obey the decisions of the Supreme Court. You could have a court packing fight. You could have people engaging in what's called interposition, where they, like, you know, states pass laws saying that we just aren't going to follow what the Supreme Court says. And, you know, I mean, I don't know what is scarier, the world where no one takes the judiciary seriously or the world where the judiciary is dominated by partisans who aren't applying anything that resembles the law.
Right.
But like, I don't like either of those options, and we shouldn't have to make that choice.
Yeah, especially from, you know, people who tell us that they're going to be, the umpires are going to call balls and strikes and all of that. Is it possible, in your opinion, that, you know, Roberts, who, you know, maybe one of those people who thinks of his legacy once he's gone, sees this and maybe understands this and maybe moves somewhere towards sanity, to where maybe he's not the vote that overturns Roe and causes all of this, or how do you see this?
Yeah, I mean, that is quite possibly the most important question in the country right now, is what will John Roberts do? And I mean, there are two aspects to John Roberts. One is that John Roberts' personal politics are extraordinarily conservative. You know, I was speaking recently with someone who clerked on the Supreme Court while Roberts was chief, and what this former clerk said to me is, look, Roberts just doesn't have the capacity to be sympathetic to liberal arguments. Like, Justice Kennedy, who, you know, for many years was the swing voter, like, wasn't a liberal and didn't, like, necessarily sympathize more with conservatives, but he, like, understood the weight of arguments that sound in equality, or, you know, arguments that sound in fairness, the sort of arguments that liberals make. Roberts does not possess that capacity. But what Roberts does possess is he really cares about institutions. He believes in the Supreme Court as an institution. And so the tension that's going to go on in Roberts' mind is going to be his desire to score as many victories for conservatives as possible and to implement a conservative legal agenda that includes things like neutering what's left of the Voting Rights Act that he's believed in since the 1980s, and his ability to recognize that if he goes down that road, people are going to lose faith in the Supreme Court as an institution, and the institution itself may be, you know, may be in danger of losing all of its moral authority. And I don't know which John Roberts is going to win out. I don't know if it's going to be conservative crusader John Roberts, or if it's going to be, you know, high-minded defender of institutions John Roberts. But the fate of the Republic literally rests in this one man's hands.
And I got to tell you, that's more power than should be in any one man's hands.
Right. Yeah, and especially one man who is not elected. I mean, John Roberts is just a guy who was who's a really good appellate attorney for a while, and, you know, then was eventually appointed to a judgeship. And he has shown some capacity for nuance in the past. Like, I mean, like the example that everyone points to.
The Affordable Care Act.
Exactly. Like, I mean, he seemed to recognize in those cases, and like it's been reported that he initially voted to strike down the law and then changed his mind. You know, he seems to realize that, like, had the Supreme Court struck down the signature legislative accomplishment of a designated president, of a Democratic president in a party line vote, then it would have been perceived as a monstrous overreach, and it would have been perceived as, like, you know, it could have damaged the institutional legitimacy of the court. So
right.
He has the capacity to understand that. The question is, you know, when, you know, Alabama passes a law, as they tried to do, which, you know, shuts down the ability of people who live in black neighborhoods to vote, will he say, if I let this happen, like, there are going to be people in the street, there are going to be people with pitchforks outside of the Supreme Court chanting, pack the court? Or, you know, does he say, well, I thought since 1982 when I worked in the Reagan administration that the Voting Rights Act is unconstitutional, and so I'm just going to follow what I've always believed here.
It's going to be interesting to see how this plays out. But let me ask you about Monday, because, you know, there's this scheduled hearing where Kavanaugh, I guess, is going to be there. There's some question whether Professor Ford is going to come. In fact, she's saying without an FBI investigation, she's not going to, as I understand, not going to testify. And it's kind of bizarre to me that they're going to want her to sit at the same table that the person who she's accused of attempting to rape her. And then there's also Susan Collins, who threw in yesterday with the idea of allowing each attorney to cross-examine the other, which is just freaking nuts to me. Let me ask you about that. Is that a good idea? Is that a bad idea? Where do you go with that?
I mean, between having, like, an attorney on either side interrogate the witnesses and having a panel of senators do it, I like the idea of having the lawyers do it better. But, I mean, I think regardless of how this hearing is set up, I think that it is going, I mean, what is being asked of Dr. Blasey here is monstrous. Like, she is being asked to spend, you know, to relive the single most traumatic moment of her life, a moment more traumatic than, like, anything I've ever experienced in my entire life, and then to sit in a chair where she is going to be berated and belittled and called a liar and humiliated by 11 men who want nothing but to destroy her, because if they destroy her, they get Brett Kavanaugh on the Supreme Court. That's what she's being asked to do. And I understand why she is reluctant to do it, because she's being asked to serve her country in a way that no one should be asked to do. But that is the ask, and I hope that she does it, because you know, I think the only way to keep this man off the Supreme Court is if she endures, you know, the humiliation, you know, and the abuse that will be dealt on her by people like Ted Cruz. And the American people watch this on TV and they say, no one should be treated this way in this country. And, you know, we insist that the senators stop this train that they're on.
Yeah, I asked the question right away. You know, who's going to be the Arlen Specter? Who's going to be the one saying, "Well, are you?" I mean, Orrin Hatch seemed to be the front runner here, saying that maybe she's mixed up. We have to think about who Kavanaugh has become. It just seems like a whole bunch of bad for them, and nothing. I hope she does testify. I do. I hope she shows up and, as you said, takes what is going to be an evil set of questions and intentions and all that. But I think the optics are going to just destroy the GOP.
Yeah, I mean, and if you look at who is on the Senate Judiciary Committee, I mean, it's Chuck Grassley, Orrin Hatch, Ted Cruz, Mike Lee, Tom Tillis. You know, it is a list. First of all, there are zero women on this. There are zero Republican women. There are several Democratic women on the Senate Judiciary Committee. But, like, you know, Ted Cruz has the emotional intelligence of a trash compactor. I mean, these are not people who are going to approach this with with sensitivity. I don't think that many of them have the capacity for empathy to like understand what she is going through and to be able to approach this with sensitivity if they try.
Right.
And I mean, it is monstrous what is being asked of her. But I think that if she does it, it will be, the Republicans on that committee are not going to come off looking good.
No, and look, as I was thinking the other day, it could, if she does and Ted Cruz does something stupid, could send him packing on the unemployment line, which I think would also be a good thing. Last question I've got for you. Do you think that they pull his nomination before Monday, or do you think they're just going to ram this through?
I don't know. I think right now their play is that they're hoping she won't show up. And it's unclear, at this point, I think she is very likely to show up, but it's unclear whether she will or not. If it becomes clear that she is going to show up, I mean, the White House hasn't been giving a full-throated defense of Kavanaugh. Trump's statements have been equivocal. They haven't been sending out top-level surrogates. They've been sending out the sort of, political operatives that you send out to complain that some lower court nominee isn't getting a hearing fast enough. They aren't sending out the Ted Olsons and the Paul Clements and some big, names with gravitas to defend Kavanaugh. So, it looks to me like the White House is keeping its options open.
Right.
And I don't know what they're going to do, but if she is going to testify, it doesn't strike me as impossible. Well, let me put it this way. If I were a reporter in Indiana, if I were a news outlet in Indiana, I would have a reporter camped out in front of Amy Coney Barrett's house to make sure that she isn't hopping a flight to Washington.
Exactly. Because she's the person that I thought, the simple solution here is pull Kavanaugh, put her, I don't remember her name, but put the woman in the place and just say, you know what, we hear you, here's our answer to it. Because she's actually worse than he is.
Yeah, I mean, she's really conservative. I mean, I've met her. I debated her once before she became a judge. And personally, she's quite charming. I think that she would come off very well in a confirmation hearing. And, like I said when we started this conversation, as much as I would like for Donald Trump not to be able to fill this seat, and, we just have 8 justices for a while until the next president gets to fill it, I don't think that that's a realistic outcome. If they cut bait now and they decide to swap in Barrett or Kethledge or Hardiman or any of the other names who are just as conservative, if not more so, than Brett Kavanaugh, they're going to win. And, so ultimately the only thing at stake here is, there's no substance. It is, will we stand up for the principle that we're not putting someone who is credibly accused of sexual assault on the Supreme Court?
No, and that's, and that goes to the soul of the party. And, and we'll see if they're soulless. We will see what happens on Monday. Ian, I appreciate the time, the thoughts, the insight. Thanks so much.
Thank you.
Always great talking to Ian Millhiser. He's the editor there at the Think Progress, the Justice blog. Highly, highly suggested. And I wanted to talk to him about the Facebook thing. Next time we will get to that. Quick break. Right back.